You're listening to Chaos on the Set, a chaotic TV and film review podcast. It is Lost Season 4 spoiler talk time. My friend James is here. Say hi, James.
Hi.
To break down any spoiler-related discussion of the ABC series Lost. We're focusing in specifically on Season 4, but we'll have spoilers for all of Seasons 1 through 6. So please proceed with caution if you do not want to be spoiled on Lost. James, thank you for joining us.
Oh, happy to, as always.
I went into Season 4 of Lost being like, this is my favorite season. And then I watched it and I was like, I'm so embarrassed that I said it was my favorite season. Just because there's a lot of chaotic things that happen, like things that don't pay off, like don't trust the captain. I was like getting more annoyed by that on rewatch. But I'm curious for you, as an overview rewatcher, how do you think Season 4 fares?
So back in the day, Season 4 was always my favorite.
Oh,
like,
yay!
Yes, it was. Like, I loved Season 4 because the highs are so high.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we start so strong. I feel like the beginning of the end is such a great episode. Mm-hmm. The Locke and Jack stuff has reached its zenith. Jack pulled a gun on Locke and fired it.
And my favorite line in the finale when Jack and Locke are talking is he's like...
threw a knife into the back of an unarmed woman. He led half of our people across the island and got most of them killed.
Well, Jack, you put a gun to my head and you pulled the trigger. I was hoping we could let bygones be bygones.
Let's let bygones be bygones.
Literally! That was the most insane thing that Jack maybe ever did in the show, was that.
Yeah.
Like, but in retrospect, I do kind of agree. Because not only does some of the stuff not pay off in Season 4, like you said, like, don't trust the captain, which I guess is just Michael being chaotic, mark, you know, is, like, the most charitable explanation.
Or the writers just going on strike.
Or the writers going on strike and deciding to abandon that as a concept, which also fair, you know. But we also set up some pretty major greater show things that don't pay off, specifically... the Ben and Widmore of it all.
Oh, should we just get into it?
I mean, like, it's so disappointing because, like, that stuff in Season 4 is so good.
Yeah, and like, it's way more interesting than Jacob, I think.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely, because we know these characters.
And it's not a god.
Yes! like, Shape of Things to Come is, like, top 10 episode, in my opinion.
So let's talk about, I think... a big meat of this podcast is going to be talking about Ben and Widmore, so we might as well get into it. I mean, the whole season is basically them battling, right? Charles Widmore is the unseen, mostly, villain of Season 4. And a big question is, why is he fighting so hard to get on the island? Why is he fighting to get to Ben specifically? Why is he doing all of these efforts to literally get Ben? Why did he stage a fake...
get into Ben.
Well, okay, so here is my theory, which James can agree or disagree with, but I believe they agree with me, is that we know from Season 5 Charles Widmore was on the island, and I believe this is also revealed in Season 5 that Ben kicks Charles off the island because he has a secret family. Why would Ben be so mad that Charles has a secret family if it were not that Ben thought he was the only man in Charles's life, the only love in Charles's life. Sadly, Charles was being a bi icon and had a secret wife and Penny on the mainland. But I think, honestly, the level to which they fight only makes sense if they were once in love. Like, nobody would stage a fake plane crash for somebody if they did not at once love him. And maybe part of Charles's love is for the island, but I think... They had a summer romance. It ended badly. They both have these major ego problems, and they both think, like, the person to get with to make your ex jealous in this situation is the island, right?
So, like, I think they do absolutely act like bitter ex-boyfriends, like, for sure. And that is the energy that I think the show is intentionally going for. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe not, like, intentionally, like, queer-coded.
But, I mean, they meet up in the middle of the night in Charles's bedroom.
Exactly. And, you know, these men are intimately familiar with each other.
Like, they used to sleep in tents together.
Yes! but that's kind of the thing that's so frustrating. Is that, like, even though, like, we get... like, indirect Widmore backstory in Season 5. the way that we abandon that, and like it just leaves that, like, that's one of the few things in the show that leaves me with more questions in a bad way.
Yeah.
You know, where it does kind of just feel like we're leaving stuff on the table.
Yeah.
And then when Widmore comes back in season six, it's just kind of like, okay.
Yeah. The season six Widmore maybe does not play fully into this theory. But I think to add an element, to add a layer of this bitter ex-boyfriend theory, I always, when I first met Martin Kimi, I was like, why is this man so angry? Like, the level of fear he has in his eyes when Ben knows his name and he, like, literally breaks Michael's legs because Ben knew his name and he's like, you sold me out to him, means that he knows stuff about Ben that other people don't. And he's scared of Ben, but I also think he's jealous of Ben. I don't think Widmore and Kimi were in love. I think Kimi fell in love with Widmore. We're starting this podcast off really chaotic, but trust me, when you rewatch it, it's just so clear to me that, like, you see, I can totally see this, like, Jack Donaghy to Liz Lemon-esque lecturing that Widmore probably did to Kimi of just, like, getting drunk and talking about his island days and talking about Ben and just, like, saying things he probably wouldn't say freely. And Kimi slowly fell in love with Widmore, but Widmore only ever saw Kimi as an employee. He never saw him as anything more than that. And because of that, Kimi hates Ben. Kimi's like, what does he see in Ben that he never saw in me? It all checks out.
I'm so sorry. You're going down a road I can't follow.
You don't get it?
No, I get it. Like, I get where you're coming from. I don't agree.
Okay.
Necessarily.
Well, I pitched this to my twin sister, and Shreya was like, Kimi is a straight man if I ever saw him.
Like, exactly.
But you don't think that man is repressing something?
Well, I think, like, The vibe that I always got from Kimi is, like, he's been briefed on Ben. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows what, like, he knows who Ben is. He knows what Ben's deal is. And I feel like part of the Charles Widmore Ben instruction package is don't let this guy get inside your head.
Yeah.
You know?
But he does.
But he does.
Yeah.
Completely. Because, and I think that, like, what gets Kimi so, oh my God.
Yeah.
Is, like, if Ben knows his name, it's like, oh, this guy knows everything about me then.
Yeah.
And how is he going to weaponize this against
me?
Get inside my head.
So he is scared of him.
And because, like, you know, I'm sure that, like, he's been set up as a threat. Like, a major threat. Like, that's why we're sending all of these fucking goons.
But it also, the way they keep going back to, like, why are you willing to blow up the island? Why are you going to all the shooting Carl on site? And everyone seems to say, oh, Charles Widmore just has a lot of money. Like, you would do this for all his money. And I'm like, money cannot be the main motivator.
No,
here.
The motivations make no sense.
It's unless, love.
Exactly. That. No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Like, with the information that we have and that the show has provided, that is the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, what else, you know? Because, like, they have to actively contradict this in season six when he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when he comes back, I'm pretty sure that he's like, oh, he forgave me. Jacob forgave me. It was a lapse in judgment. Lol. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, Jacob is inconsistent, so that tracks.
Yeah.
Going back to this Widmore-Ben interaction that they have in Charles's bedroom, Ben says you change the rules, which is after Charles gets Alex killed. There's thinking that this is candidate related, of like, you can't kill a candidate. But honestly, I feel like this is more just rules that Ben and Charles put with each other. You think they just had rules that you can't kill each other's daughters?
Yeah, I think that they had a gentleman's agreement.
Yeah.
As to, you know, men who have families, quote unquote, you know, that, like, this whole thing between us, it's between you and me.
Yeah.
You know?
And do you think they made that agreement in bed one night together?
I do. With sharing a bottle of McCutcheon.
One day we may fight, but we'll never hurt each other's families. Guys, they love each other. Where do you think Widmore got all of the dead bodies?
Oh, we answer this question. Because, like, you sent me this. And I was like, no, this is, like, coming at you live, a definitively answered lost question.
What's the answer?
It's when Tom is recruiting Michael.
Yes.
In, like, the little package that he gives him about Charles Widmore and about, like, the plane that's been found. He's like, oh, and this is the graveyard. This is the cemetery in Thailand
where
Charles Widmore exhumed the 300 bodies that he needed.
Where do you think he got the fake plane?
He bought it in he bought it in Thailand, or he bought it, like he said, like, because that's all included in the like the package. Like, here's the receipt for the 777, and here's the cemetery where he dug up the 300 bodies, and like, oh, and this is the, and he found the deepest place on earth to hide it because it would be so expensive to ever dig the, to ever bring those bodies up and have them tested for DNA.
Okay, all answered. I love these Lost spoiler pods because it always teaches me that more answers than I realize.
Because like, I have, you know, I have no reason to believe that's not true.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, one last Ben question, which I got when I was listening to a lot of just, like, now that I've gotten into season five, like, obviously Ben is crying when he's turning the frozen donkey wheel, saying, are you happy now, Jacob? Because the presumption is that he's leaving the island for good. But, spoiler, it's not for good. He comes back very soon. I've heard a lot of theories recently that Ben knew at the time that he wasn't leaving the island for good. He knew in some way, shape, or form, or at least because of his battle with Widmore, he would one day make himself back at the island. So, A, do you think that is true? And then, B, why do you think he's so emotional turning that frozen donkey wheel?
I think that he is very much accepting that he may never make it back.
Yeah.
But he's for sure not going to not try to get back, you know? Like, I think it's like, okay, like, this, it's this, like, because him, for him, turning the wheel is, like, the culmination of months of humiliation that the island has thrown at him.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, this is, and this is the ultimate rejection.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the place that I thought was, like, you know, the one place where I could be is telling me to literally get lost and lose the address, basically. Like, delete my number.
Which...
don't come back.
I wonder if... I'm just curious how he... I guess it's, like, been cemented more because Locke is being so favored, but Ben this whole time has not spoken to Jacob. So what made him feel more favored before? Is it just Locke's presence now?
Well, I think that what made him feel favored before was him seeing his dead mom, which is so definitely the smoke monster in retrospect, you know? And also, like, compounded by, oh, these people from the future have chosen this boy.
Wait, sorry, pause. How can it be the smoke monster if his mom didn't die on the island? I thought the smoke monster could only inhabit bodies of folks that died on the island.
I mean, that's true, right? Is that true? I think that's right.
I feel like it has to be true because of why they need John Locke to come back to the island.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right about that. Like,
but I feel like, honestly, Ben and Locke are both men who are always looking for reasons to feel special, so I can still buy into him thinking.
Well, it's also, like, it's the question of whether Ben's mom is the smoke monster or if she's the Whispers.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, because the Whispers also answered in season six when Michael's like, oh, we're the ones who can't move on. And that is not explicitly said that it's just for the people on the island.
Yeah.
You know, I think that makes sense that it would be just for people on the island. But if I'm just like, okay, like, what could it be?
Yeah.
You know?
And we have heard Whispers off island.
Yeah. And we have, exactly. Like in Something Nice Back Home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Like, but yeah, so, like, I mean, I always interpret her as being the smoke monster, because I feel like that makes more sense.
What?
Like,
remind me what exactly she tells him.
So, he is standing outside of the sonic fence, or on the inside, on the barrack side, and he's gonna run away. He's running away from home, and then she appears and is like, it's not time yet, Benjamin.
Yeah, that feels smoky.
Yeah. And Ben's like, what? And then when he does eventually go and he runs into Richard and he says that, and he says, like, I saw my mom. And Richard's like, did she die here on the island? And Ben is like, no. Richard's like, oh.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Which implies Richard knows the smoke monster dead man theory, which I guess makes sense because in Abaterno.
Yes.
And we'll get more into this in the later seasons, but it makes it more Richard's fault for everything that happened, because Richard, of all people, should be like, that's not John Locke.
Richard is a victim of time travel. Yeah. Richard can't be blamed for time travel shenanigans.
He endured, like, real torture in that ship, so I'll attribute anything to PTSD to
it's true.
Let's move on to the meet Kevin Johnson, Michael of it all. I have this timeline that I stole from a podcast that stole this from Lostopedia about basically what happened in between Michael leaving the island and Michael getting back onto the freighter. So let me just read this really quick, and then we'll see if it resonates as a full Lost viewer, right? So November 27th, according to Lostopedia, is when Michael and Walt leave the island in the season 2 finale. November 29th is when Michael and Walt reach an island where they sell a boat and charter a cargo ferry to the United States. This is around the same time in Lost where Jack is watching the Red Sox win the World Series. November 30th through December 5th is when Michael and Walt arrive in the U.S. Michael leaves Walt with his mom. Then Michael tries to commit suicide. This is around the Every Man for Himself, Stranger in a Strange Land timeline in Lost. December 5th through December 30th is when Tom leaves the island. Michael meets Tom. He sees all of the explainers that James was talking about earlier about how Charles, you know, commissioned a ship, plane to sink to the bottom of the ocean. Michael then goes to Fiji and boards the freighter. This is around Trisha Tanaka is dead to the man from Tallahassee. Basically, 13 days total pass from the time Michael leaves the island to Michael getting on the freighter. 6 days pass between Tom leaving the island to recruit Michael and getting back to the island in time to play football with Jack in that season 3 episode closer. So anyway, my question is, and I feel like I know the answer, is 13 days long enough for Michael to leave the island, go back to his son, life with his son that he's been so desperate to make, then decide, you know what, this life isn't going to work out for me. I'm just going to repeatedly try to kill myself and then eventually leave his son to go out on the freighter and leave him for good. Like, the only explanation I can offer, and I genuinely need to believe this is true, is the timey-wimey nature made it, like, at least a year of him not being able to connect with his son before deciding to leave for good. 13 days? Less than 2 weeks?
I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say no, that does not make sense at all. Because it does feel like he's been gone for a year. And also, what date is it that he, like, hops onto the freighter?
Of what?
Of December? When?
It says on between December 5th and December 10th. I guess he arrives in Fiji on December 10th.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, it sounded like, just because, like, the Christmas of it all is, like, so...
Oh, yeah.
Is, like, so, like, what's throwing me. Because, like, when he's in the hospital, there's already Christmas decorations up, you know? So it's already, like, into December, past Thanksgiving, I guess.
Yeah.
And, like, the Constance on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
So, like, okay. I mean, I guess, like, there is a version where, like, okay, he's on this boat. Like, he tells Walt, like, son, I had to kill two ladies to save you. I feel really bad about it. And I'm so eaten up with guilt that I'm going to make you share this guilt with me.
Yeah.
And then Walt, like, completely disowns him, doesn't forgive him, whatever. Like, 2 weeks still seems really fast.
It's less than 2 weeks.
Like, it seems like, I understand him falling into despair.
Yeah.
Under those circumstances.
But, like, get a therapist.
Right. Like, but I mean, like, I don't know. Like, it seems like 2 weeks is, like, way too quick for that arc.
Do you think that we could, you say, that time just worked differently for some reason?
I mean, on some level, perhaps.
Yeah.
If I'm being, like, full, like, lore-brained, like, being absolutely most charitable, like, Ben gives Michael the bearing to get off the island. And, like, we should assume that he should be able to get off the island with no problem. But
he could have gotten the time disease.
But the thing that could screw with that is the system failure at the hatch happening.
At the same time. Interesting.
Because in season 4, in Confirmed Dead, when we meet Daniel and when he does his rock experiment, or like maybe we don't hear the bearing at that point, but whenever we hear the bearing in season four that Daniel gives to us, it is a different bearing than the one that Ben gives to us.
Yeah, it seems like bearings change quite frequently.
Yeah.
So I would say that what probably happened is Michael, in like a White Christmas episode of Black Mirror, was basically repeating every day for him was one whole year. So instead of 13 days, it was 13 years. And that is the only way I can understand why Michael would have chosen to do this.
100% agree. I completely agree.
And, it makes sense. We had this hatch explode at that exact time. Walt is special, so it wouldn't happen to him.
Right. So that is really the only kind of cover that I can give to this.
Yeah.
Where I can make it make sense, even though it doesn't make sense.
All right. We got somewhere. I've been very much gaslighting my sister into thinking Jin is dead. Just to read some of the texts that she was sending me while the freighter was about to explode, it says, "Get Jin out now. Now, now, now. GTFO Jin. WTF. It's so not like this. Jin, what the fuck? Oh my god, no. Get off. Jump off. Jump off. Jin, what the fuck? Jin, jump off. Period. Oh, hi, Christian." And then she said, "He had time to swim away. I don't believe this. I don't believe this dead. He's better not be." But I think slowly with me just talking more about how Jin is dead, talking about how he didn't get out in time, she has like been gaslit into thinking that he is dead. I will say, I also did not think Jin had died. Like, when I watched Jion, I was like, he's not dead. Like, we haven't seen the body. Stannis Baratheon is still alive. And I just refused to believe that they would kill him off like that. When we see the freighter explode, that's when I finally came to terms with the fact that Jin is dead. Obviously, he's not dead. Spoiler, guys. I think it's important to think that Jin is dead at this point because we need to grieve Jin now, like I did, because you're never gonna, if you still hold out hope that Jin is alive and hold out hope that you'll get this reunion and that Jin will eventually meet his daughter, you're going to be disappointed. And so while I love Jin in the 70s and him learning English like fluently and all of that fun storyline, I think you need to just grieve him, think he's dead, and then just be happy with what you get there. Because if you think he's alive and you end up wanting whatever you could dream up for Jin and Sun and Jion to live a happy life, you're just going to be so disappointed.
No, I completely agree. And like, even at the time, I was skeptical that Jin was dead. But the thing that made me think, oh no, he's definitely dead, is the fact that Daniel Day Kim received a DUI during the filming of season 4 of Lost. And if we were going with the pattern of Michelle Rodriguez and Cynthia Watros also getting DUIs during the shooting of season 2 of Lost, it really seemed like ABC does not care for that.
But then he did show up at Comic-Con, right? Or something like that?
I don't think he showed up at Comic-Con.
Okay, they just...
Michael showed up at Comic-Con before season 4.
That's what they spoiled.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this is something that Lost has done so dirty. Saeed has also done dirty, but at least he is reunited with Nadia a little bit. Before she gets hit by a car in a genuinely comical fashion.
The amount of people in Lost who are comically hit by cars.
It's like Mean Girls.
It is. It's true.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's anything more to say than this other than Jin was done dirty. Go watch Fire Lord Ozai.
I would say, yeah, Jin was done dirty. Saeed was done the most dirty. Mm-hmm. But I would say Jin is very, very close to the top of that list as well.
I wonder how they're going to feel when... Because when we're recording the season 4 non-spoiler section, Michael said something along... Mike McCarty, co-host Mike, not Michael Dawson, said something along the lines of like, oh, if he's not dead, that'll be stupid. And I can understand feeling a little cheated when you've already gotten one death fake out with Jion to do it again. Like, do you think it's fake of the writers to do this?
Well, because this is the thing. Like, the Jion death fake out and There's No Place Like Home is the same fake out.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the same death.
It's the same death. We're still, it's just, did it really happen or not?
Yeah.
Is the question. You know? And like, is it cheap? a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. Like, a little tiny bit.
But also, it is a fun timeline thing.
Yes, it is. And, like, the emotion still hits. Mm-hmm. It still works for me because he never gets his happy ending, because neither of them do. That is what I think allows the emotion to still be like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. Because he is, in a way, dying in that moment, mm-hmm. you know, if we're going to be esoteric about it, because he'll never get to be the father that he wants to be, yeah. you know, and that is the moment where, like, this moment in time is sealed,
yeah.
I guess, you know. Like,
who do you blame for Jin not getting on the freighter in time? Is it Jack's fault for pulling Kate away? Is it Kate's fault for not trying hard enough?
It is absolutely Kate's fault for not trying hard enough, because I've seen that episode so many times.
It hurts every time.
What is she doing? What is she doing?
Also, like, just let Sun... I mean, I get Sun's pregnant, so she doesn't want, like, pregnant Sun to go get Jin. But, like, her being... It pass the potato with Aaron is so annoying. Like, somebody just needs to hold him and yes. like let Sun get her husband and continue to hold Aaron. Sorry,
yes.
Kate.
Yes. And then, like, so, like, Kate says, I'm gonna find Jin. Mm-hmm. We cut away for what feels like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then when we cut back to Kate, she's like, wait, I gotta go find him.
But also Jack is like, I'm not leaving without you. And
right.
he pulls Kate
so,
away.
But if Kate had left
yeah.
to go find Jin, Jack would have kept the helicopter
there. That's true, that's true. But then they would have all blown up.
And it's really a question of priorities for Jack.
Yeah.
Because Jack's not waiting for Jin.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Okay, but I would also argue that Jin should not have been down there in the first place. Like, he's like, I stay. And I'm like, but what are you doing? What are you contributing right now, Jin?
But... like, I get what you're saying.
He's being a good friend to Michael. He's,
because, like, that friendship...
Yeah.
That friendship between them was, like, so foundational, mm-hmm. like, to, like, why season one is so good.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, putting them back together when they're both, but mostly Jin, such different people now...
Yeah.
Partially as a result of this friendship.
Yeah.
It is really kind of beautiful putting them back together before Michael dies, finally.
Yeah.
You know? Like, so I get it. I get it. I get it. And he also doesn't know the helicopter's coming.
That's true.
Like, you know?
Okay, let's talk flash forward lines. You know, season four has a lot of things that they say in the flash forwards that Well, they don't really make sense to me, even with knowing the full scope of the picture. Let's start in the beginning of the season four premiere, when Jack and Hurley are playing horse together. And when Jack leaves, Hurley apologizes to Jack for going with Locke. Why do you think Hurley's like, he didn't do anything wrong. It almost seems like they're trying to show a bigger divide than actually ended up being the case.
I think there's a couple reasons for this. I do think that when it happens... the divide is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know? I do think it is, like, a kind of big moment in the show. But also, I think that, like, the thing that we see again and again and again is that Locke is really bad at being in charge, you know? Like, when you think about, like, the things that happened, mm-hmm. like, after, like, Hurley went with Locke, and also Hurley maybe feeling partially responsible for Claire coming with him.
Yeah.
You know? I think that's part of it. Like, because I don't think Claire would have gone with Locke if Hurley didn't.
Yeah.
And Claire is, quote-unquote, gone.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like he feels bad about that.
Yeah.
He feels bad about all the people that died that maybe he also feels partially responsible for as yeah. being, like, the moral true north of the camp, you know? Like, if Hurley's on board, it must be a good idea because Hurley's a good guy.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you know. And Jack is acting crazy. Like,
but when is he not?
But when is he not? But, and then on top of that too, like, they leave Hurley behind.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, no, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they no.
Well, wait. Sawyer leaves Hurley.
I'm thinking of when Saeed shows up and they use Hurley as bait, but he wasn't really.
And when?
In
oh, at the end of season four, when they're trying to get Ben out?
No, like in the beginning of season four, when it was the Saeed episode, when Saeed is like going to get Charlotte from Locke.
Oh,
like Hurley's locked in a closet.
Yeah.
I forgot. That was fake. Like Hurley was still on Team Locke. It's
okay. We'll ignore this, but we'll cut this part out.
But yeah, because like I don't know. Like I think that I think it's more attributable to Hurley feeling responsible for people missing and lives lost. Yeah. And Locke and throwing his lot in with Locke, who is not very good at being in charge. When Jack, for all his faults, is better at being in charge of this group of people.
Speaking of Jack, you know, acting like the abusive man he is, he, in The Shape of Things to Come, when Kate has gone to obviously do a favor for Cassidy or something for Sawyer, and Jack starts freaking out and screaming, like, I saved you, Sawyer made his choice, and I'm the one that saved you. This does not make sense for me in hindsight. And we even talked about this in the non-spoiler pod because, like, they've seen that Sawyer did not make his choice. I mean, he made his choice to stay, but his choice was literally saving everyone. Is this just Jack, you know, on one of his usual tears? Like,
I think it absolutely is. I think, like, he gets like this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Jack being, like, the deeply, deeply insecure person that he is. And it's him, like, doing, are you fucking my dad?
That's true. I forgot.
Except to Kate. And then is like delusionally being like, I care about you more because mm-hmm. I didn't jump out of the helicopter.
Yeah.
So Sawyer clearly cares about you less because he left. Which is delusional. Yeah. Like an absolutely delusional
way of seeing. The Lost could not have gone on for 6 seasons were it not for Jack's anger and delusion. Like, he slows down the plot so much.
Absolutely!
They're so lucky for him. Okay, last question I want to ask you is about the shark. This is in my least favorite episode of season 4, The Other Woman, when the flashback storyline sucks because it's just Ben being an incel, and then the current storyline is Charlotte and Dan going to turn off of a gas that, if it was on, could kill everyone on the island, but they went and turned it off to save everyone. When I first watched the episode, I was like, sure, guys, sure you did. Like, it made it so, like, why would I'm sending somebody on a mission to do something with a negative net input is just like a weird thing to do from a writing perspective. It's like you can't prove that they did it or not. So I was so sure that they were lying.
Like, there's no part of that episode that works or makes sense. Like, the Ben incel stuff is at least like vaguely interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, what are we doing? Like, at least in terms of, like, getting at the, like, why is it so important that Juliet stay here?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, but that's not very satisfying either. Yeah. Like, but I don't know. Because, like, it's also never clear if Harper is even really there.
Is Harper the smoke monster?
Is Harper the smoke monster?
But then Goodwin is married to the smoke monster.
You know, like, I don't know, like, but I agree, like, it, I mean, like, based on what we know about Charlotte and Dan, like, I don't think they would have been turning on the poison
gas. It was just, like, a weak episode.
It is, like, I don't know, man, like, it, like, nothing about that, I completely, like, memory hole that episode, you know?
No, I skipped it.
Yeah, like, it's bad. It's the worst episode.
And it's right after The Constant.
I know. Like, it's, like, the biggest whiplash. Because I feel like it is, like, such a period on what I feel is, like, the strongest stretch of episodes across the entire show, which I think are bookended by 2 Desmond episodes.
What are the...
I would say from Catch-22 to The Constant is, like, the best run of episodes. The best consistent run of episodes in the show.
Cutting Eggtown.
I don't hate Eggtown.
Why do you think it's called Eggtown?
I don't.
Oh, we have to talk about John Locke.
Oh, of course. Of course. This is his... I mean, like, this is truly his season.
I mean, we get... Cabin Fever is, like, basically a previously on John Locke episode where we get him from baby to adult.
Yes. It's like, here's everything else in John Locke's backstory that we haven't gotten
to
yet.
I genuinely laughed at the moment when he gets the science camp brochure and he's like, I don't want to go to science camp. I like boxing and sports.
It's sports. I like boxing and fishing and sports. Not science. That was so goofy. I love that.
But it's also funny because he's like protesting against being a man of science.
Yes.
I mean, at what point do you think in this previously on John Locke fate was he like, okay, I'm actually special? Because in high school, he seems like I'm pathetic.
Yeah. But he always seems that way in all of his flashbacks. Like, because, like, you know, also, like, I feel like for, like, a six-year-old or whatever, that moment with Richard is so traumatizing.
He's like, why didn't I pick the right thing?
I know. Like, I mean, like, Cabin Fever, I like that episode for the on-island stuff more than the flashback stuff. Because I also, like... While I think the scene with Matthew Abaddon is interesting, like,
oh my god, that scene is so good.
But I don't need him to, like, literally say, you should go on a walkabout.
Yeah. It's, you know what I love about that scene, which is going to be difficult to explain in a podcast medium, but on rewatch, when you're, like, watching Abaddon walk, Locke to the elevator, but then he's standing over the stairs, and Locke basically has this moment of fear of, like, am I about to be pushed down the stairs? And he's like, can I just go back to my room, please? And then Abaddon turns Locke around and just, like, sits down on a bench to be eye level with him. And you're like, oh my god, the blocking of the scene is just brilliant, because you go from, like, a threatening, imposing presence to just, like, no, I'm your equal. I'm on your
absolutely.
Level. Like, Lance Reddick, RIP.
And because, like, I also think that's, like, very emblematic of the way that Locke sees the world at that moment. I think it's great, great direction.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Bender probably did that episode.
Probably.
Maybe it was Stephen Williams. I can't remember. But yeah, like, it's such an interesting episode. Because, you know, and it's goofy for the reasons that we talked about. Because, like, I don't need Locke to be so literally have almost been a man of science.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I wish that had been a little more, like, broad than, like, here's a brochure for science camp.
Well, and also, it's, like, so frustrating for me because I'm like, what if he went and just found his people? Like, what if he just found friends? Like, he was so...
And he probably would have.
Yeah. I think Locke just, like, always wanted to belong to the group that he thought he was supposed to belong to. And if he just... I mean, I guess if he just let it go, he would fall into a family of weed farmers and get them in trouble. So maybe my theory isn't true, but it's just such a tragic life.
I know. Like, but I do love, like, that scene at the Orchid between, like, Jack and Locke as, like, the follow-up to the Exodus conversation.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but when they finally speak in the season 4 finale, have they not seen each other the whole season, or have they had any run-ins?
Have not seen each other since the premiere.
Yeah. That's what I really love about season 4, even though sometimes it gets confusing, because, like, when Jack and Hurley reunite, there's, like, weird tension and you don't really know why. Like, some of it you like just forget because so much has happened. You're like, wait, what's going on? What is the relationship between these two characters at one time? But it is also like, oh, you realize it's been a whirlwind, you know?
Yeah.
You really have fun.
It's been a very emotional few weeks on the island.
I mean, if you just think about Sawyer's fate, right? Sawyer goes from literally the cabins being bombed and running out, getting to freedom, walking out of the jungle, losing Claire, having Aaron, walking back into the jungle with Jack, then getting out, getting onto the helicopter, jumping off of the helicopter, swimming back to the island, and then immediately flashing through time.
And then falling in love.
And then falling in love.
And then falling in love. Like, but this is also, like, still, like, Sawyer is never beating the best character allegations because, like, it's so great seeing, like, the threads of his arc in season 3 of, like, Hurley being like, no, dude, you're leadership material.
Yeah.
Because he is the strongest leader that is in the cast.
Yeah.
You know?
You conned me into being nice.
Exactly.
That's never conned.
And then, like, we really get to see some follow through on that in season 4 because he is the one actually doing, like, the leadership stuff at the barracks while Locke is off finding his purpose with Ben and, like, you know, making chicken. Like, and then we fully culminate in season 5 with LeFleur, and it's, like, such a satisfying progression.
And then also Sawyer just starting to call Hurley Hugo and he goes back for him. He's like, oh, shoot, he's with Ben. Then he's in trouble and I gotta go get him.
Exactly!
He loves so hard. I love Sawyer. Alrighty. Did we hit on everything? I mean,
I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, like, new characters, love them.
Miles is great.
Miles is great.
He's a great Zhao.
He is. He's the best part of
it. I honestly think so. Because, again, in Lost, Miles plays such a good... And if you don't know what we're talking about, the actor for Miles, Ken Leong.
Ken Leong, yes.
Is cast as Commander Zhao in the Avatar The Last Airbender live-action series, which... I can't recommend, but watch the animated show. Yeah. It's just making me honestly want to watch the animated show. But Miles is such a lovable dick. And not that Commander Zhao is lovable, but he plays a great dick.
He does. Like, he is, like, head and shoulders the best performer in the cast. And he just has, like, the perfect energy of just this, like, smarmy, you know, like... Oh no, I'm your friend.
Yeah.
But I'm the villain.
Yeah.
You know?
So good.
But I know, obviously, Daniel, always love Daniel.
Faraday,
and, yeah. Yeah, and Lapidus as well.
Who Lapidus is so good.
He's the best.
Never have I loved a conspiracy theorist more.
I saw a cow.
When he, like, unlocks Michael and he's like, why didn't you tell me that you were on the plane? Like, you know I'm a conspiracy theorist. I got you, dude.
He is the guy that I feel I would most chill with.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, even in, like, when they're on whatever ship is rescuing them to take them to wherever they have to go to lie, he's just, like, popping back some beers, having a chill time.
But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's it.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for joining me. So we're going to watch up till the floor for season 5. So we'll record a season 5 spoiler pod. But in the meantime, do you have any place to direct folks to find more of your voice on the internet?
I mean, I guess just follow me on Letterboxd, at Prince Squeak.
At Prince Squeak. My Letterboxd is at Shruti Marate. My Twitter and Instagram is at Micro Marate if you care to follow me there. And then again, follow our show. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd, all at Chaos on the Set. You can send us an email, chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com. We're supposed to cover the Avatar The Last Airbender live action series if I can get through it. So send us any emails or thoughts on that if you care to share. And again, our next podcast coming out will be Oscar predictions. If you have any Oscar predictions, or season 5 Lost thoughts, again, you can get them all to us at chaosonthesetpod@gmail.com.